Well, personally, I'm fed up with this so-called president. I don't respect, I don't trust, I don't believe. He's just, here's what I don't understand. And you can disagree with me, I don't care. Here's what I don't understand. You can vote a guy in, but you can't vote him out. You gotta wait. You gotta wait 4 years. Do you know what can happen in 4 years? I could fall down and break my hip. Has nothing to do with this. I'm just saying 4 years is a long time. His approval rating is down to 38%. His disapproval rating is up to 58%. That comes to 96%. 4% of Americans don't even know he's president, apparently.
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
They've gotten about as weird as they can get.
Whatever.
I know. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. That's what this is about. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome to the program. Pleasure to have you here. Are you comfortable? I don't want you to be uncomfortable, my God. Ugh, that would be awful. Sit down. Go on. Sit down. Sit down. There you go. Would you like me to take your shoes off? Okay, I will. Ooh, smelly feet. What is this, Velcro? Yeah, I have Velcro sneakers, by the way, and I've never admitted this to anybody. Well, I probably did. I can't bend down and tie stuff. I mean, what do you think, I got time to bend down and make knots? Give me a break. I'm not a freaking sailor. What am I doing down there making knots on my shoes? This is what, they've invented stuff that's so much easier. It's called Velcro. You put the damn shoes on your feet, and then you bend down, and you just slash the thing across, and it sticks automatically. Why am I making knots like I'm tying up a boat to a dock? I don't want to do anything down there. I'm 6'3". For me to get down there, I have to take an elevator. It takes a couple of minutes. And then I got to get back up. I got to wait for help. I mean, geez. Take your shoes off. Relax. Calm down. Am I a calming method for you? Calm down. Would you like a drink? What kind of drink do you want? No soft drinks. I don't do soft drinks. No. They're loaded with sugar. Yeah, it will kill you someday, and I don't want to be a part of it. I want to make you healthy or not. You go somewhere else. Listen to somebody else's show and have a soft drink. Not here, brother or sister or whatever species is left. You just be quiet now. Would you like an alcoholic? But now we're talking. How about a glass of wine? It's so much easier to make. You open the bottle up, you pour it in the glass, and I give it to you. I've always wanted to be a bartender at a wine and beer bar. nothing confusing. Like, I like a cosmopolitan on the beach, a sex in your pants, please. Can I have a sex? How do you make that? It's a little bit of grenadine, a little bit of wine, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You got to throw that in, and I'm going to shake it, but not too hard. And then a little vermouth, but you pull the vermouth out, and then you put the sweet vermouth in. A little bit of vodka, a little bit of gin. The gin's got to be, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so no, not that brain gin. No, I can't do that. What kind of bartender can do that? But a wine and beer bar? An idiot could do that. What would you like, sir? Get me a Heineken. Here. I mean, just for the, I didn't have to do it. I had to reach into a cold little bin and pull the bottle out. Here. Tell you what, I'll take the cap off for you. I'm going to expend some energy so you tip me. I'm going to take the cap off. Now give me $3 for the tip. Yeah, the beer is like $7. Give me three. Give me $10 because I twisted the cap off. Wow. Wow. To be honest, we didn't even have to twist it. I had a bottle opener. Done. Finished. There's your drink. What could be a simpler job? They're not bartending. They are pretty much just, I'm going to give it to you-ing. That's all they do. You asked for it? Here it is. I've got it back here. I will give it to you. We're done. We're done. Go off and have a nice life. Enjoy yourself. I gave you, gave me the money, I gave you the beer, we're done. Except for the people that order Corona, they like that little lime on the top, you know, and the bartender actually has to slice limes and put it in the bottle. Oh, God. What'd you do today, dear? I had to slice a lime and put it in the bottle for a guy. He wanted a Corona. Oh, my God, are you all right? I know. It's so much work. And the other thing is wine, man. It's just wine. What would you like? A Merlot. Here's your Merlot. I mean, it's what it says on the bottle. I'll pour it in a glass for you. I'll give it to you. It's a little harder than beer because I have to pour it in a glass. But this is what I do. I give things to people that they ask for, and I expect a tip accordingly. I don't have to make anything. I don't have to do anything. I hand it to you. It's like postage and handling. That's the kind of job I want. But Ron, you have to stand on your feet for 6 hours. I think I can do that. I think I have the ability to stand up for 6 hours. I've got a better ability to sit down for 6 hours, but I think I can handle the standing thing. I think there's a bar in front of me. I can lean on it, can't I? What a wonderful job it is. You have conversations with people that you don't have to have relationships with. What a perfect life that would be. I don't want to know you. I don't want to be you. I don't want to hear your problems. I just want to give you the beer or the wine. I don't care. It's a wonderful job. It's like being a psychologist and you don't have to care. You don't dispense any drug. Well, in a way you are, I guess. And of course you make believe you're interested. Like, well, how's your day going? Oh, it's been awful. I got up at 6 o'clock and I had, my tire was low and the wife is, All you got to do is just sit there and go, I don't care about your problems. Throw them at me, man. Let's dance. Tell me all your problems. I'll just stand there and I'll, Then they fall in love with me because I'm so engaged. You really listen to problems well. That would be an ideal job for me. I don't have to deal with people. I deal with people, but I don't have to interact with them. That's the best. That's the best. You don't want to be lonely. You don't want to sit in a room by yourself and just, you know, in a cubicle. That's lonely. You know, with nobody around, nobody to interact with. Who are you going to yell at? Who are you going to be grumpy to? You want people around you because we're animals. We travel in packs, like cigarettes. So you want them around, but you don't want to deal with them. You don't want them on a personal one-to-one basis. You just want to, like, see them. You know, you want to see them scurrying around, but you don't really want to act. It's like squirrels. When I'm sitting in the park on a bench and I see squirrels just scurrying around, I feel like everything's good. There's some kind of ecosystem going on. If I didn't see any squirrels, I might panic. I don't have to interact with the squirrels. I don't have to feed them nuts. They don't have to sit on my lap or anything. I don't have to make idle promises to them. Nothing like that. We don't have to exchange phone numbers. So squirrels are cool. I don't give a crap, man. And they gather their nuts. Hey, so do I. So do I, especially when I'm wearing really tight pants. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more program.
Wildlife poaching doesn't just happen in faraway places. It's a crime committed against countless wild animals all around you. Poachers don't care about hunting seasons, endangered species, or even the safety of other humans. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, which protects wild animals through habitat preservation and by confronting cruelty, needs your help. Learn your state's wildlife laws, so when you witness a crime against a wild animal, you can report it immediately. Help protect wildlife at wildlifelandtrust.org.
Okay, here's the thing. I totally dislike this president guy. I think he's a despicable human being. Everything he does is just really moronically stupid, and then there's no question about it unless you support him. Again, unless you think that he could stay in the middle of Manhattan, shoot somebody, and you still support him, I can't talk to you. You go and do something. Go have a soft drink, as a matter of fact. Help yourself. But if you understand what I'm talking about, and that this guy has a lot of faults and a lot of personality disorders and is kind of a dangerous moron, well, then I'm going to tell you, job number one, the first thing, this is how we can correct him. This is how we can correct, but he can't be corrected. He doesn't want to be corrected because he's always right. So forget it. He's got the answers to everything. He knows how to do everything, and everybody else doesn't. So, you know, you can't deal with people. Man, if you met like someone like that in real life, you would just say, you're an asshole, and walk away. But look what you did. You put one in the White House. Look what you did. Oh, look what you did now. First thing you got to do is you got to tie this guy's hands behind his back so he can't tweet. And you also, well, he just can't tweet because other people can tweet for him. He's got to shut up. He's just got to shut up. Shut up. Stop talking. Stop talking. Stop tweeting. Just shut up.
Please be quiet. Please be quiet.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Not good enough. You need to shut up. You can't be quiet. You need to shut up. Number two is involve the American people in some of your thoughts and decisions as opposed to your cronies. This reminds me of Michael Jackson. And Trump thinks he is Michael Jackson. He can't sing, obviously. Well, maybe he can. I have no idea. I don't think he can because he can't do anything he says he can do. He can't sing, but he travels like he's to be protected and revered, and you must kiss the ring of the Trump thing. It's the same kind of thing. He's surrounded by yes people, and if they're not yes people, they are people that are trying to use him as a puppet, and he's very puppetable. The major puppet master in Trump's presidency is Russia. And that's not fake news, man. That's real stuff. I don't know if you heard the latest development, but Trump, obviously a few weeks ago, started accusing Obama and the Obama administration for wiretapping and doing surveillance on Trump Towers during the campaign. This is a felony, it's treasonous, it's illegal, and Obama placed the orders for this to occur. And people said, well, Donald Trump, do you have any evidence? I can't tell you. I can't. That's like in a court of law, you know? That man murdered my wife. How do you know? I don't know. I can't. Somebody said so. That's all. I have no proof. What, are you kidding me? I have no proof whatsoever. So I heard it somewhere. Somebody in a bus stop I think they said it. I'm not sure. I think they muttered something like that. So that's true then. This is the way the man operates. Apparently, the Russia news people or Russia's government, they leaked what they made up information, because they do fake news too, you know. They made up information and say that because there are accusations against Russia for hacking the Hillary Clinton thing, and we're going to be having a trial about that, by the way, this week, a federal trial. So Russia turns around in their heads, and Putin says, well, we'll turn it around. We'll do this, we'll say that that Obama, whom we hate, wiretapped Donald Trump and take the focus off of this, and like tit for tat or tit for tit. So Russia gets involved, and someone in Russia's circles starts dropping information to the news outlets that Obama tapped Trump Tower, which wasn't true, but they made it up. And then the smartest news agency in the world, Fox News, and I mean that sarcastically, picks it up. And there's a guy, there's an analyst, Judge Napolitano, who used to be a circuit court judge. And he actually picked up this information. I think he was a circuit court judge. Could have been a defense attorney. I have no fucking idea. But he was a judge, and he's an analyst now for Fox News. He hears this. It's fed to him. He reports it as news and as fact. This is what Fox News does. Donald Trump's watching the news. I don't know how he has time to do this, or maybe one of the people around him says, hey, I was watching Fox News, and this Judge Napolitano says on Fox News that Obama was wiretapping Trump Tower during the nomination process. So this Napolitano puts it out as news. Trump finds out about it. He tweets it out, repeating what he heard on Fox News, but not saying Fox News says or has a theory. Trump tweets out Obama wiretapped Trump Tower, which is low, egregious, and a felony, a new low for Obama. That's what the tweet says. The president takes it like playing telephone and amps it up and puts it out as fact. This is the guy that claims everybody else is doing fake news. He's in the chain of fake news. Apparently, that's what happened. Come to find out that that's the way it came down. So now Trump has to be embarrassed. They're calling for Trump to apologize to Obama, which I think is proper, because there was no substance for this. It was just something that they heard from a news show, and the news show heard it from something else. This is the way our government is running. This is what we expect out of the president's office. Can you imagine what would happen if we went back to this Saddam Hussein days when we invaded Iraq based on claims that were not true, that they had weapons of mass destruction? They had some bad shit, but they weren't ready to use them on everybody. But the last Bush was convinced that we had to do something. Immediately, we invaded Iraq, which started all this horrible, horrible terrorism stuff to the level where it is now with ISIS and all that crap. Oh, Dolo, Sholo crap. I'm embarrassed for our president. He makes statements to other world leaders that are divisive, combative, disrespectful. I'm embarrassed, personally, as an American citizen who holds this country very dear. I'm embarrassed and concerned. Okay, I'm done with this, talking about this for now, and I hope you are too. It's just, I don't know. I just get them out. Take another vote. Disapproval 58%, approval 38%. Take another vote across the country. The guy would be out in 2 minutes. Again, you can vote him in, but you can't vote him out. I think in extreme cases such as this, I think you should be able to. Maybe we do need to change things a little bit in our government and have a threshold that commands the removal as much as the placement thereof. I don't have 4 years to waste. That's a long time.
Smart lights, smart locks, smart thermostats. You love your new connected technology. And the Consumer Technology Association wants to help you protect the security of your devices. First, don't use default or easy-to-guess passwords. Create unique ones and keep them safe. Next, look for and install security updates from device manufacturers. Also, have an active firewall for your home router. And consider using a professional installer to set up your new devices. Easy tips from the Consumer Technology Association to help keep your devices secure.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff. We're going to talk to our first guest right now. He's an ophthalmologist. For those of you that may not be familiar, that has to do with the eyes. He's an eye doctor. We all have eyes, some of us, two of them, and they got to work together. I mean, they got to get along. And with that, we see things. We discover things. Very important. You got to get your eyes checked on a regular basis. Not right now, I'm doing a show, but maybe later, if you don't mind.
Good morning, Ron. How are you?
How are you today?
Doing very well, thanks. Yourself?
I'm doing great. Ophthalmologist Dr. Michael Cooney joins us now, and we're talking about nearsightedness, actually. Many of us are nearsighted. How serious is this?
Ron, that's a great point. You're right. So many people are nearsighted, and to simplify that down so everyone's on the same page, what nearsightedness means is that you need glasses in order to see far away.
Mm-hmm.
And there are different levels of nearsightedness. You can kind of have a mild amount of nearsightedness, or you can be very, very nearsighted. And when you're very nearsighted, you're at higher risk of complications in the retina, which is the part of the eye that's like the film of a camera.
Uh-huh.
And one of those things, which is what we're here to talk about today, is what's called myopic choroidal neovascularization, which is a fancy word for blood vessels that start to grow abnormally underneath the retina in people who are very, very nearsighted. And the problem, Ron, with those blood vessels is they can cause severe vision loss in a very short period of time, which can lead to loss of straight-ahead vision.
Now, it's not necessarily the case that everybody who has more extreme forms of nearsightedness necessarily get into this condition. It's just that they're more prone.
That's correct. It's not a common problem, but right. 41,000 people in the United States develop this problem on a yearly basis.
Okay.
But if people develop it, it can be quite serious. Uh-huh. So early detection, like most diseases, is really important.
Uh-huh.
And people who are very nearsighted need to have a full dilated eye examination by an ophthalmologist or a retina specialist on an annual basis in order to be screened for this complication, plus other nearsighted-related retinal complications like retinal detachments.
Yeah. Doctor, is there a percentage idea of how many people actually do have annual eye exams, which should be at any age? Obviously, it has nothing to do with getting older. But do many Americans indeed not go to their ophthalmologist or to their quote-unquote eye doctor?
Well, Ron, that's a great question. The answer to your question is you're right on point there. The American Academy of Ophthalmology recommends that everybody over the age of 50 have a full dilated eye examination on an annual basis. I'm sure, people lead busy lives and years go by very quickly.
Right.
And, the percentage of people who actually follow all the guidelines and do get in for these, checkups is much less than would be ideal.
Right.
Which is why we're doing this today, which is to get the message out, to remind people that they need to do these things, to take care of themselves.
Okay. And most things are correctable if caught at an appreciable early time, I would assume.
That's true. Now, unlike a lot of other retinal problems, which usually affect much older aged population, what we're talking about here today of myopic CNV affects younger age people, so ages 45 to 64, working age population.
Yeah.
The good news in all of this, Ron, is that a new medicine has recently been approved for this condition, which is called Lucentis, and it is highly effective in controlling this problem, stabilizing the vision, and in many cases, actually improving the vision. And I have many patients who have this condition, and if they're treated appropriately with this medicine, most of them do extremely well, but it needs to be detected early.
And how is this medicine administered? Is it a pill? Is it a drops? How is this done?
So the medicine is administered as a micro injection into the eye, which I know sounds terrible, but it's actually very simple, and it doesn't hurt, and it takes about a second to do. And you know, this medicine has been around for many, many years. It's approved for other retinal conditions other than complications of nearsightedness. For example, it's approved for macular degeneration. It's approved for diabetic complications.
Okay.
So an injection in the eye is very, very simple, believe it or not, and it's, once you have one done, if you need it, it's underwhelming.
Yeah, well, it is, as long as the first time you can get the anxiety out of there.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Maybe someday someone will invent droplets that'll do the same thing.
We're hoping.
Well, you can do it. You know, take some time off and do this, if you would, please.
A lot of research going on in this entire area.
The best information you're putting out here, and of course this is a particular condition, but that everybody at every age, whether you're 50 or younger, it just doesn't hurt to have your eyes checked on an annual basis, my God. And then if they see anything, then you take a look a little deeper. It's just so common. And people go to the dentist sometimes twice, three times a year. Like, so why is, these are your eyes, you know? I don't understand why people don't pay attention.
You're exactly right. I think vision is one of those things that people really take for granted until suddenly they've lost it and realize what they've lost.
Yeah.
So I agree with everything you're saying there. And again, if there's one message for any of your listeners to take home today is, get in, get a full dilated eye examination on a regular basis, particularly if you're very nearsighted, because you're at risk of a host of complications.
One more thing before we part company here, this floater thing, is very interesting. I know so many people that all of a sudden develop floaters in their vision, and then they're explained at that point what's going on. And of course you have to be careful that there's no, further, problems with the retina, but nobody ever discusses it ahead of time, like this is what can happen at a certain age. It's kind of like the unspoken condition, oddly enough, I find.
Well said. You're absolutely right. Floaters are very, very common. What they are little protein clumps that are part of the gel called the vitreous gel that fills the center part of the eye, and that's normal. And as you get older, that gel starts to become a little bit less gel-like and a little bit more liquidy. And those protein clumps start to be able to float around a little bit more in that liquid.
Yeah.
And people see these things as floaters or look like little insects floating around, et cetera. And, that's a common thing that happens to pretty much everybody that is not talked about on a routine basis.
Right.
But if you develop an acute onset of floaters, that can, herald the onset of other more complicated things and be risk factors for things like retinal tears and retinal detachments.
Right.
So, yeah, floaters need to be looked at, particularly if they are, acute and abrupt in onset, because that can mean significant things are going on.
Okay. All right, thanks for the information. How do we get more information that we can
Ron, there's a great website, geteyesmart.org, which has a wealth of additional information on this topic and others.
Perfect. Dr. Michael Cooney, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. You be well, Ron.
Take care. Bye-bye. Dr. Michael Cooney, ladies and gentlemen. I want to tell you about an event that's coming up in just a few days from now. It's the 25th annual Taste of Metro South. If you live in New England, anywhere in Massachusetts, southern New Hampshire, Rhode Island, you're in okay driving distance for this wonderful thing. It's one of the events that I look forward to every single year. I really do. Because the taste of Metro South is this. You walk into a large ballroom, and there are over 40 food vendors, 40 restaurants. You just taste all their stuff. And you have as much of it as you want. You can go back to the table as many times as you wish and sample. It's the ultimate buffet, ladies and gentlemen. It's all different types of food, all different cultures. It's entrees, appetizers, desserts, drinks, ice cream. I mean, it's everything. Barbecue, gourmet items. I mean, just tons of things to have and to taste, and cakes and pies, and oh my, my. It's an incredible feast. It's taking place on Wednesday, March 22nd at the Conference Center at Massasoit. They call the Massasoit Conference Center in Brockton, Massachusetts. That's 20 miles south of Boston and 30 miles north of Providence. So you can all come to that if you live in that whole big radius there of all those people. It's from 5:30 until 8 o'clock p.m. on Wednesday, March 22nd. Now, you got to get tickets because there's only a certain number of people they let in, you know. You want to make sure you got enough food for everybody. So tickets are going fast. I want you to contact them. Here's how you can do it. You can give them a call, first of all. That's one way of contacting them at 508-586-0500. That's 508-586-0500 if you have any questions about it. Or you can go to their website, MetroSouthTaste.com. MetroSouthTaste.com. There you can purchase your tickets online. So go, man. It's food, and it's a lot of it, and it's good stuff, and good people, too. Well, as long as we're talking about stuff, we talked about the eyes. Should we do the kidneys? I mean, it just stands to reason. Why not talk about kidneys? Dr. Howard Mansour joins us now. He is a gastroenterologist and a hepatologist. He's in Granbury, Texas. And we're talking about National Kidney Month. Every month has its own organ, apparently. And this one is the kidney. We're talking about chronic kidney disease and chronic hepatitis C. How prevalent is this, doctor?
Well, chronic kidney disease, about 26 million Americans are affected by chronic kidney disease. And if you have chronic kidney disease, you're more likely to have hepatitis C. In America alone, about 3.5 million people have hepatitis C.
Okay, now what exactly is hepatitis C? To be honest with you, as a layperson, I consider that to be a sexual disease, but it's probably not because I'm usually wrong about everything.
Well, hepatitis C is a virus that you, once you come in contact with it, you have about an 85% chance of becoming a chronic carrier.
Okay.
You get hepatitis C. You can get it through sexual contact, but generally it's contact through blood products, contact through needles.
Uh-huh.
If you're born between the age of 1945 and 1965, it's recommended that once in your life you get tested for hepatitis C because there's inadvertent contacts. For instance, before we had good sterilization techniques, you know, you went to the dentist, you had your ears pierced, simple things that you don't think of
mm-hmm.
may have given you the disease, and it's silent. You don't feel any symptoms when you have hepatitis C.
Oh, okay. So is this done through a blood test panel?
It is. It's a simple blood test mm-hmm. for hepatitis C antibody that your doctor can perform, your family doctor can perform it. And then if it's positive, then they do some confirmatory testing.
Okay. Doctor, is it accurate to say that every adult, perhaps over the age of 30, let's say, I'm just making up an age, should be having their blood tested every single year anyway for just general purposes?
Well, you should be going in for your yearly physical examination. Mm-hmm. You know, for hepatitis C in particular, if you're a baby boomer, now that's defined as being born between 1945 and 1965.
Yeah.
But also, if you were a veteran, you should get checked. If you had a blood product given to you or a transplant, mm-hmm. organ transplant before 1992, any type of body piercing,
right.
Especially if it was done in a non-standard fashion at a specialized center,
yeah.
You should consider being tested.
Okay. All right. Is the inference that after a certain year that people who got tattoos, it was okay?
Well, yes. It depends on where you got your tattoos, mm-hmm. too, okay? So, you know, people get tattoos because a group get together in their local house and say, hey, right. let's get tattooed. Tattoo parlors do follow sterilization techniques, and they're relatively safe.
Yes.
But, you know, when the HIV era came out, that's when great emphasis was made on sterilization techniques and things like that. So it's been proven, for instance, that you can transmit hepatitis C in the old days at barber shops when you're getting a razor cut. You know, the dentist's office back in the 60s before we sterilized equipment as effectively as we did today.
Okay.
And, you know, that's why, for instance, you know, I get this all the time in my office. You know, a woman, say, 60, says, hey, I don't have a tattoo. I didn't do drugs. I didn't have a blood transfusion. But they have hepatitis C, and they want to know, well, why and how'd I get it? Uh-huh. Manicuring can do it back in the old days before they... Uh-huh. It's safe now, but the old days, they didn't follow the sterilization technique.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that makes sense, I suppose. All right. Okay. So is this something that a doctor should be advising a patient, or should the patient be advising the doctor, or is it a group deal?
It's a group deal. You know, the various societies recommend to their physicians getting tested.
Uh-huh.
The CDC recommends that if you walk in my office and you're born between 1945 and 1965, I should test you. But doctors have a lot of things on their mind. So we want the patient to be aware, and that's the purpose of this.
Right.
You know, I'm teaming up with Merck this month because it's National Kidney Month. And if you have hepatitis C and kidney disease, you're at greater risk for liver damage and greater risk for acceleration of your kidney disease from the hepatitis C.
Okay. I assume if you have kidney disease, they would have tested your blood a long time ago, though.
We hope so. But, you know, again, that's why we're out here promoting things, to make people aware of it.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. All right. So it behooves us to bring this up in conversation when we see our doctor anyway. Is this something that would have festered over the years? In other words, if this had been the case to the baby boomers, did they develop hepatitis C like decades ago, or does it grow in the body to the point where it materializes later?
What happens is, you're correct in saying they were exposed decades ago.
Yes.
It's been in the body silently causing damage. And so if you don't discover it, about 30% go on and develop cirrhosis of the liver, and then they present with end-stage liver disease. If you discover it, there are cures now that cure the virus with pills, 3 months of treatment, 96% of the time. So the emphasis is, let's find it. We've got good cures now. We can get rid of this virus before you get serious damage.
Yeah. So it's like anything else. The earlier you discover it, the more treatable it is.
Absolutely.
Okay. Where do we go for more information?
If you want more information, there's a government website, and it's cdc.gov/hepatitis, and it can give you all the information you need. Or you can just Google hepatitis C. There's a lot on the internet.
Beautiful. Hey, this has been very informative, and thank you for putting it into our terms so we understand it. And you're right. I mean, it's your body. It's in your control. You take charge of it. And,
absolutely.
Yeah, this is empowering in that sense. Thank you so much, Doctor.
Thank you for having me.
Take care.
Good day.
Bye-bye. I should have been a doctor. Although I would have had to work too hard and all that medical insurance and dealing with all those people and having education, having to look at all those organs and dissecting things and frogs, and I can't do it. I'm glad I'm not. I'll just be a talk show host and leave it at that and just be happy with what I have. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm out of time for today. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Please join me tomorrow. Until then, I wish you peace.